Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, Text 34. Tadvidi pranipatena.
Tadvidi pranipatena.
Pariprashnena sevaya.
Pariprashnena sevaya.
Upadekshanti te jnanam.
Upadekshanti te jnanam.
Jnaninas tattva darshanah.
Jnaninas tattva darshanah.
Tat.
Tat.
That knowledge.
That knowledge.
Of different sacrifices.
Of different sacrifices.
Vidhi.
Vidhi.
Try to understand.
Try to understand.
Pranipatena,
pranipatena,
by approaching a spiritual master.
By approaching a spiritual master.
Pariprashnena,
pariprashnena,
by submissive inquiries.
By submissive inquiries.
Sevaya,
sevaya,
by the rendering of service.
By the rendering of service.
Upadekshyanti,
upadekshyanti,
they will initiate.
They will initiate.
Te.
Te.
You.
You.
Jnanam.
Jnanam.
Into knowledge.
Into knowledge.
Jnanina.
Jnanina.
The self-realized.
The self-realized.
Tattva.
Tattva.
Of the truth.
Of the truth.
Darshinaha.
Darshinaha.
Seers.
Seers.
Translation. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following the principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor, by independent study of books of knowledge, can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. one must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Translation again. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. In the historical development of the Krishna consciousness movement in the Western world, at least, the acceptance of the spiritual master was the crucial point. When Srila Prabhupada came to America, none of us had any idea of Krishna consciousness. And whatever sense of Krishna consciousness we got came from him. In the West, we were accustomed to thinking independently and acting independently. And in particular, the generation of young people that Srila Prabhupada met were in the mood of revolting against the established order and authority. At the time, young people were protesting the war in Vietnam. They were protesting the discrimination against blacks in the South in particular. And they were just revolting against the establishment, against the old order, and trying to establish some new order. So into the atmosphere of the 60s, Srila Prabhupada came. And he introduced a completely different culture, a Vedic culture, where the process of acquiring knowledge was different. As we read in the verse now, the process of acquiring spiritual knowledge is based on submissive inquiry and service. And surrender, ultimately. Of course, when Srila Prabhupada first came, he introduced knowledge of the soul as distinct from the body, and knowledge of the Supreme Soul as the controller of both of the energies, material and spiritual. But because of Srila Prabhupada's love and compassion, young people became attracted to him and attached to him. I remember when I first came to the temple and saw the devotees bow down with their heads to the floor. I wasn't used to it. But eventually I was also moved to do the same thing. Then later, Srila Prabhupada introduced the practice of offering flat, prostrated obeisances. So as it is, to bow one's head to the floor was already, you know, a little different, a little difficult. But to actually prostrate oneself flat on the floor before the deity was, you know, was another feat that required a further adjustment to accommodate. So here I'm commenting on the word pranipatena, too. To surrender, to prostrate oneself, to offer oneself. And here, we're talking about prostrating oneself or offering oneself to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Anyway, devotees learned Bhagavad Gita from Srila Prabhupada. He began from the beginning and proceeded verse by verse through the entire text. And of course he came to the verse we read just now about the spiritual master. And of course one of the basic principles of spiritual master or spiritual knowledge is that the spiritual master should come in the disciplic succession, and he should present the same knowledge that he has received through the disciplic succession, and eventually one should take initiation from a spiritual master in the disciplic succession and surrender unto him as the representative of Krishna, and inquire from him and render service to him. So after some time, Srila Prabhupada announced that he would conduct the first initiation ceremony. And the devotees were not quite sure what the whole thing meant. So they approached the devotee who they considered might be best qualified to answer. Of course, initially, the devotees approached Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada answered that taught that initiation means that the spiritual master takes charge of the disciple and instructs him in the spiritual science and delivers him back to Godhead. And the disciple accepts the spiritual master like God. So when the devotees heard Srila Prabhupada's answer, they became alarmed, confused, concerned, because all along Srila Prabhupada had preached very vehemently against the impersonal philosophy that we are God. And he is just, pronounce very strongly that anyone who says that he's God is actually God. So after being trained so thoroughly in the defects of impersonal philosophy, and after learning to loathe the very idea of considering oneself to be God or trying to merge and become one with God, the devotees were completely baffled when Srila Prabhupada said that the disciple accepts the spiritual master like God. So they discussed among themselves and they decided that they would approach Keith. Keith was wise and he would guide them. So they approached Keith and told him what Srila Prabhupada had said. And, you know, Keith said that we don't accept the spiritual master as God, but because he repeats the same message as God, as Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, we accept him as the representative of God. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would give the example of the ambassador, that the ambassador represents the country. You know, if the ambassador from America is insulted in some place, it's considered an insult to the United States because he represents the United States. And similarly, when the ambassador is received nicely, he understands that the country is offering respect to the country he represents. Or an example Srila Prabhupada gave in India was of the Viceroy of India. The Viceroy of India represented the king, the queen, and people would offer gold and jewels and other valuables to the Viceroy. But the Viceroy would never keep the offerings for himself, but he would, you know, he would take the offerings to the king or queen, and the offerings would become part of the royal treasury. He didn't accept them on his own account for himself. So the spiritual master is the representative of Krishna. He's the ambassador of the spiritual world, and he brings knowledge of the spiritual world to the people of the material world. And whatever service they want to offer to God, they offer to the spiritual master, and he passes the offering on to the Lord. He doesn't keep the offering for himself. So although the disciple respects the spiritual master as God or worships the spiritual master like God, the spiritual master is not God. He knows that the spiritual master is not God, and the spiritual master certainly knows that he's not God, but he is actually just the humble servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of God. Through disciplic succession, he is the servant of his spiritual master. His spiritual master is the servant of his spiritual master. His spiritual master is the servant of his spiritual master, and all the way through the line to Krishna. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, Gopi Bhartu Padakamalai or Dasa Dasa Anudasa. I simply want to be the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the maintainer of the damsels of Raja. So that suggests that one is the servant of one's spiritual master, who is the servant of his spiritual master, who in turn is the servant of his spiritual master, and so on. So, the devotees, developed more and more faith in Srila Prabhupada. And not only did Srila Prabhupada instruct them in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures, but he also engaged them in practical devotional service to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, which is also the instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Once, when Tamal Krishna Goswami was in the hospital in Bombay, he had a dream. And in the dream, Srila Prabhupada was meeting with the previous acharyas and giving them the report of his activities on the earth. And in the dream, he said that the people on earth basically have no good qualities now. They have no knowledge, they have no austerity, they have no renunciation, they really have no good qualifications for spiritual life. But the one qualification they do have is that they have faith in me. And because of their faith in me, they will do whatever I tell them. And because they will do whatever I tell them, they can make advancement towards the ultimate goal of life. So, Tamal Krishna Goswami had the dream while he was in the hospital, actually when they gave him anesthesia for the operation. And in the meantime, Srila Prabhupada had come to the hospital. He actually wanted to stop the operation because he didn't have so much faith in the treatment that Goswami Maharaj would get in India. He thought he should have the operation in America. So he actually rode down town from Juhu to try to stop the operation. But by the time he got there, Tamal Krishna Goswami had already just come out of the surgery, and he had the dream that I just related, and then he related the dream to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, yes, it's true. So really, on the basis of faith in Srila Prabhupada and faith in the holy name, you know, the devotees made wonderful advancement and did wonderful service, spread Krishna consciousness. So after Srila Prabhupada left, we still had the same sort of naive optimism and enthusiasm, and we thought, you know, we'll just continue the same way. And Srila Prabhupada had named some of his disciples and it's a little complicated, but he named some of his disciples to before he left the planet when he was ill. He named some of his disciples to give initiation on his behalf. And the people they initiated were actually Srila Prabhupada's disciples, but because he was so ill, he couldn't, you know, deal with the initiations anymore directly. And then he indicated that after he left, you know, his disciples would become regular gurus and initiate disciples. But in the years since Srila Prabhupada left, we've had to confront the reality of Srila Prabhupada's departure and the implications of Srila Prabhupada's departure. And our understanding of spiritual master has become more refined. Of course, when Srila Prabhupada was here, we didn't need a very sophisticated understanding of spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada said, you know, I am your Diksha Guru and your Shiksha Guru. So when we actually analyze spiritual master according to the Vedic literatures, we find there are actually two categories of spiritual master. One is Diksha Guru, or the spiritual master who gives initiation, and the other is Shiksha Guru, or the spiritual master who gives instruction. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada was the only spiritual master we knew, or we had. He was the only teacher we had, and therefore, you know, he was our Diksha Guru and our Shiksha Guru. But after Srila Prabhupada left, we found that there are many devotees who were representing Srila Prabhupada in the sense that they were coming in the disciplic succession from Srila Prabhupada, and they were presenting the same philosophy as Srila Prabhupada and engaging devotees in the same mission. So then the idea that, you know, that there's just one spiritual master for everyone, and that one, well, anyway, I mean, even when Srila Prabhupada was present, he did teach us the culture of respect for other senior devotees. But still, compared to Srila Prabhupada, we were all very junior. And Tamal Krishna Goswami commented that Srila Prabhupada, as the perfect acharya, taught us everything by his own example, except for one thing, and that was how the spiritual master relates to his own godbrothers, because Srila Prabhupada didn't have any godbrothers with him when he came to America. And even when he returned to India, none of them really joined with him. Nor did he show us how to deal with disciples of God brothers, because he didn't have any God brothers with him, and he didn't have any disciples of any God brothers with him. So we had to learn how to deal with God brothers who are in the position of spiritual master, and how to deal with disciples of God brothers. And you know, gradually we understood that you know, Vaishnava relationships are like a family. And just like in a family, one has a father, but he also has uncles and aunts and brothers and sisters and cousins and so many other familial relations. And sometimes, depending on the circumstances, of course, I guess it's here, but it's not as well developed as in India. But in India, they have the joint family system where all the brothers live together even after they're married, and they sort of share the duties and. The children respect the brothers of their father just like their father. And the wives of their uncles just like their mother. And reciprocally, you know, the uncles take care of the nieces and nephews just like their own children, and the aunts take care of their nieces and nephews just like their own children. So it's very congenial. And the idea that we grow up with in the West more of just like the nuclear family, like you know, we only really have a strong relationship with our father. I mean, we might visit our uncles sometimes, or they might visit us sometimes, but you know the real authority is the father. You know, that translated very easily into the situation when Srila Prabhupada first came, because he was the father for everyone. There were no uncles anyway that we ever knew. But after Srila Prabhupada left, and his disciples, you know, became the next generation of gurus, then there were uncles, and you know, so gradually we've learned to have brotherly relations, even among the disciples who are acting as gurus and to have paternal relationships even with disciples of God brothers. Of course, there's another point here, which is that the children grow up, and here Srila Prabhupada gave the basic idea from Chanakya Pandit, who was a great teacher of moral and political instruction. So he advised that up to the age of 5, you treat your child like your father. In other words, whatever your child wants, you do. If your father is hungry and asks for food, feed him. In the same way, up to the age of 5, if your child is hungry, you feed him, like you would attend to your own father. Then, from, say, the age of 6 to 15, you treat the child like your enemy. In other words, under strong discipline. And, of course, in Vedic civilization, the period from the age of 6 to 15 is usually the period where the child lives in the ashram of the guru, the brahmachari. Basically, when we met Srila Prabhupada, we were like probably up to a certain point, we were like babies in Prabhupada, just not really, but he sort of indulged us a bit more. But then, after a while, when, the devotees took initiation and became more serious, then we were like, the students in the ashram of the guru, and, he trained us with strict discipline. And, by the time Srila Prabhupada left the planet, none of the disciples had been with him for more than 12 years. There were very few that were with him that long, just the very first who had joined him. And most had been with him for like 2 years or 3 years. But then coming back to the analogy of the parents and the child, the parents and the children, from the age, over the age of 15, the parents are supposed to treat the children like friends, because they've been so well disciplined and well trained that they can be, treated as mature adults, like friends. So the idea is that up to the age of 5 or whatever, you treat them like your father, in the sense that you serve them and give them whatever they want. And then they become very attached to you. And because they're attached to you, from then when you discipline them, say from the age of 6 to 15, they'll accept the discipline because they're attached to you. And then after they've been disciplined and trained and educated, you can treat them like your friend. So, but again, seeing our position in relation to Srila Prabhupada, we were like, you know, pretty much in the position of being disciplined. We were at that stage. Not that we ever become independent of the order of the spiritual master, but the discipline for a brahmachari in the ashram is different. And in Vedic civilization, at a certain point, you know, the brahmachari may leave the ashram, you know, to get married, to go back to his family, or to, yeah, to pursue his occupation outside the ashram. And then there's a little ceremony, and he graduates. And then at the time of graduation, the brahmachari will give a gift to the spiritual master, you know, as a token of appreciation for the knowledge he received from him. That is called Guru Dakshina. And then when he leaves the ashram and takes what he learned in the ashram into the world and engages in his occupational duties in the world, he's not under the same type of discipline as he was in the ashram, Brahmachari ashram. So Srila Prabhupada had a very difficult challenge because, you know, the Vedic culture was so highly refined, and I mean, it may just be my own sentiment, but like very beautiful and very sublime and perfect. But it all worked in a particular context, in the context of Vedic civilization. And there are many rules and regulations in the scriptures that can be applied very easily in the context of the joint family, for example. But when we try to apply them in the nuclear family, we can, to some extent, but not completely, because, you know, the one wife or the one mother has to do everything. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, faced the tremendous challenge of having to you know, preserve the basic principles of Vedic civilization in the West, where there's no remnants of Vedic civilization, and now even in the big cities in India, there's more Western influence than Vedic influence in most places. So how to take the instructions from the scriptures and apply them in the present context, you know, is a challenge. But then again, considering all the scriptures and all the instructions and all the scriptures, the essence was, fortunately for us, Harinama, Harinama, Harinami, Vikevalam, Kalona, Steva, Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatiranyata, to chant the holy names. At one stage there was some controversy between the brahmacharis and the grihastas, and there were accusations and counter-accusations, and Srila Prabhupada commented that in Kali Yuga no one can follow perfectly. Neither I can follow perfectly nor you can follow perfectly. But if you simply criticize me and I criticize you, then our spiritual lives will be lost, and we'll miss our goal. And he said that because no one can follow perfectly in Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us the holy name, and therefore the chanting of the holy name is the process that can elevate us, out of all the chaos of Kali Yuga and all this confusion and disturbance. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna, but in the role of a devotee, specifically for the present age of Kali, he also gave the basic instruction to chant the holy names and serve the devotees. So if we at least try to follow the basic instruction to chant the holy name and serve the devotees, even if we're not able to follow the other aspects of not just Vedic civilization, but even the other practices of Bhakti Yoga, we'll be able to make advancement. And of course, what Srila Prabhupada gave us, the morning program and chanting 16 rounds and following the four principles, is pretty practical. One could complete everything. If he gets up early enough, he can complete everything by the time, he has to go to work in the morning. And even if he doesn't, he definitely complete everything between the morning and the evening and still work and do whatever he has to do in the day. So it's practical. Anyway, it's a deep subject and a vast subject, and there are many intricacies and details, but I think we'll end the talk now and see if you have any questions.
Sometimes when I think of the word surrender, I sort of think of just serving without asking any questions, which starts to sound like blind faith.
Mm-hmm.
What makes the distinction between surrender and blindly following?
Well, it's a good question. Well, there's two phases in the process of surrender. In the first phase, before one decides to surrender, or before one is convinced to surrender, one asks questions to understand whether he should surrender. And everyone who first comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, with devotees, asks questions to see whether the philosophy makes sense, you know, whether the process will work. But then they come to a point where they've tested the philosophy and the practices enough to conclude that, yes, this is it. You know, this is descending from a higher platform, and, you know, this is worth surrendering to. So then one surrenders in the sense that one, in principle, accepts the truth of what one hears, but still one may not understand it fully or properly, and therefore one is advised to ask questions, not to determine again whether the knowledge that is descending is valid or not, because one has already concluded that the knowledge is valid, but then one asks questions to understand. Just like in a classroom, say in arithmetic, one may ask questions not to challenge the system, but just to understand the processes. So when Srila Prabhupada would say that Krishna consciousness is a science, he meant that it's a subject, like a science, that has principles or laws and processes that give verifiable results, and it's not a speculative field like pretty much most of what goes on in the university is speculative. And the students also are not in the mood, you know, that this is a science and I have to learn it. They're in the mood, you know, well, I have my opinion, and the teacher has his opinion, and the author of the book has his opinion or her opinion, and we all just have our opinions, and it's like if anyone's opinion is as good as anyone else's. So, you know, and it's true, because they're all speculating, you know, they're all inventing theories and hypotheses. So, you know, there you can question, not with the idea of learning the theory as truth, but, you know, with the idea of testing the theory, whether it's valid or not. But at least in basic mathematics, you're not, like, challenging the system. If you ask questions, you're just trying to understand, you know, how the calculations work. So Krishna consciousness is a science, you know, like mathematics, where there's certain rules, there's procedures, there's axioms, and you ask so that you can understand, but you don't ask in the mood to challenge the system. So that type of inquiry is recommended after surrender.
And before surrender,
you test the basic validity of it, you know, whether whether this philosophy or this process is worthy of my surrender.
So a surrender like a black or white, or can there be varying degrees of surrender? It seems that when you're testing the water that you might start to invest yourself or surrender onto it a little bit more because you have greater faith in what it's teaching you. And then as you, the more you learn, the more surrendered you become, or is it really that you have to make up your mind whether it's true or not and then fully surrender, and that even if you learn things while you're fully surrendered, if you surrender too soon, you might learn things when you're surrendered that might make you question your surrender, you know. So, can you become progressively more surrendered?
Well, one does advance in surrender, but in principle, when one takes initiation, he's surrendering to the process. And you know, he shouldn't, in principle, he shouldn't argue after he surrenders. He's arguing with the process. But you know, the reality is that you know, one can have doubts at any stage. I mean, not at the stage of perfection, but and then the teacher will act to remove the doubts. And you know, it's sort of like when the person is surrendered, then the spiritual master can instruct the student on the basis of authority. But when the student is not surrendered, which is almost a contradiction in terms, but if it did so happen that he surrendered out of sentiment but without deep knowledge and conviction, then he may develop doubts later, and then the spiritual master will deal with him just like a new person who never surrendered and just try to start all over again and, you know, dispel his doubts. But even that, you know, I'm presenting it as a dichotomy, you know, between, you know, a new person and a surrendered person, but there's degrees, and one can sort of, you know, on the continuum, make him sort of move around. It's not that because he's in one position one moment, he'll be there the next moment. You know, if you get a burst of faith or you know, become plagued by some doubts, and so there are degrees, and there's within the one person. It's not just that. Yeah, there's a general progress, but it's not that, you know, every moment there's going to be manifest progress.
In some sense, in the surrender, maybe not so much of a measure of your faith as it is a measure of your sort of devotion or to the teacher, that even that you're surrendering yourself to their teaching, when you understand that your faith may vary, but that you're surrendering to them to help you stay on your path. I guess in my mind I was starting to create maybe surrender with faith, but faith is sort of like a a feeling of surrender can be an act, in some sense.
Yeah, but faith is the basis of surrender. Because if you don't have faith, you know, in the person or the process or the philosophy, why would you surrender to it? Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, one could surrender out of sentiment. You know, that's sort of temporary. But after one surrenders out of sentiment, one may develop, you know, more knowledge and deeper conviction. But it may happen also that someone surrenders on the basis of sentiment, and then after some time the sentiment changes.
I was thinking about one point, if you could add there. If the spiritual master is the via medium to bring one to Krishna, and the knowledge is descending from Krishna through the disciplic succession of spiritual masters, then what is the difference between spiritual masters now and Srila Prabhupada?
Well, the in one sense, there's no difference because we're repeating what Srila Prabhupada said. But the difference is that Srila Prabhupada was the founder Acharya, and as the founder Acharya, he set the standards for the institution. Because he's the founder Acharya, we have to adhere to Srila Prabhupada's standards in his kind. You know, it's like, say, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the founder of the Gaudiya Mutt. So what we understand is that he said that, you know, that if you don't have service, if you don't have a lot of service, you should chant 64 times a day. But if you have, you know, a fair amount of service, you can chant 16 rounds a day. If you really have a lot of service, you can chant 4 rounds. So he was the founder of the Gaudiya Mutt, so he could establish whatever standard he thought fit within his institution as the founder. Srila Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya of ISKCON, so he set the standard of 16 rounds minimum for everyone. So we don't have the authority to change any of Srila Prabhupada's standards in ISKCON. I mean, that's in terms of, like, authority, Prabhupada's authority as the founder of Acharya.
Can you say something like, in terms of, like a measure in terms of achievement, can we say that there's difference? Because, you know, looking at what you go for achievement, well, not comparing, but yeah, he achieves so much compared to other.
Yeah, well, then that's not. That, of course, that's true. I mean, we you know, we consider Srila Prabhupada to have, like, fulfilled the, you know, desire and prediction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, we consider him to be, you know, the disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who carried forward the mission of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But that's not but then we come into the area of Bhandaracharya. What is the difference between the Bhandaracharya and the spiritual masters who follow the Bhandaracharya? So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the Bhandaracharya is, you know, in a general sense, he's the main Shiksha Guru, and that one should look for in one's own spiritual master, say one's looking for a spiritual master, one should look for someone who's of good character, who's faithful to the Bhandaracharya, and who knows what the Bhandaracharya taught. So, I mean, if one gets into, you know, very minute analysis, you know, there's the Bhandaracharya, and then there's one's Diksha Guru, and then there are one's Shiksha Gurus. And even within the category of Shiksha Guru, there are different categories. Like, you know, there are, you know, the general devotees who can give instruction, you know, to any new person who comes, because they know more than he does. And then there are the, like, the senior devotees who are, you know, more or less the Shiksha Gurus for all the other devotees. It's like another category. And then among those, if one develops a particular, you know, faith in one or a particular relationship with one, then he can actually surrender to that Shiksha Guru, and that's like another category of Shiksha Guru. I mean, there are even categories of, I mean, this would definitely create chaos in the movement if it was commonly discussed, but so we won't discuss that. We have enough chaos as it is. But yeah, when one actually examines, there's so many subtleties and differences. I mean, we have the sentiment that we just want to bring people to Srila Prabhupada, but and I think that is the sentiment that should prevail. But in terms of the cyclic succession, I mean, Srila Prabhupada would have the same sentiment. that he wants to bring the souls that come to him to his spiritual master. But still, because Srila Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya and he is who he is, you know, we all definitely, everyone in ISKCON should have the sentiment that we want to bring everyone to Srila Prabhupada. And not just Srila Prabhupada's disciples. I think everyone should have the same mood of wanting to bring people to Srila Prabhupada. And then he can arrange for them to take initiation from someone, you know. But basically, we should bring everyone to Srila Prabhupada. Or Sarvatma. I have complete faith in Sarvatma. I can recommend him 100%.
Disregard the last paragraph.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Itai Gaur Premanandi. Srila Prabhupada.